This is Tony Pham. The forecast for tonight, they expect partly cloudy skies. There is a slight chance for a shower or thunderstorm early tonight. Low temperatures in the upper 50s to around 60. More of the same on Monday, partly to mostly sunny skies, unseasonably warm again, with high temperatures in the upper 80s and low 90s. Increasing clouds during the day on Tuesday. We'll see a chance for thunderstorms late in the afternoon or evening. The high temperatures in the upper 80s. From the WCBM Weather Center, this is Tony Pham.
Radio 680 WCBM. 21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Let's go! Batter up! We're taking the afternoon off. It's a beautiful day.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm what's left of Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Things are just getting so busy, it's hard to breathe, I'll tell you. Especially, hey, you were on my back porch. It was 103.5 degrees today. I had the hottest back porch in the state of Maryland. I'll wager that. And, of course, our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kartner. And our engineer is Jake Bryant. You know, for the past 18 years, 21st Century Radio has championed the cause of the Negro Baseball League players, and it has been, I got to tell you, a long uphill battle with the media to focus on some of the greatest baseball players ever, all of whose skins are colored. Nationally, we succeeded in getting Larry King, and then later Ken Burns of PBS, the historical documentation that they needed. As a matter of fact, some of them just read our scripts. And then getting Baltimore Mayor Kurt Schmoke, Governor Don Schaefer, and later President George W.B. Bush, our first Bush, and Vice President Al Gore to recognize and then meet with these now Hall of Famers. And most people felt by 1996 all the problems of the Negro League players were solved by the pensions, the massive pensions that the Major League Baseball offered. The few that who qualified or hadn't already passed on. But suffice it to say, as we said on WJZ-TV's morning show with Marty Bass and Don Scott, they were our major supporters too few received too little from that pension plan. And Leon Day, who was elected to Cooperstown's Baseball's Hall of Fame, died 6 days later, so he didn't get much out of that. And of course, that cut off the pension from his wife, Geraldine. You know, so without smelling the roses, many of the remaining players, basically, I guess you might say, they never really smelled the roses at all. Now, for the past several weeks, we've been telling you about Leon Day's grandson, Leon Day Newkirk, who has become a national scholar for his academic achievements. And with the help of Baltimore Sun's sports writer, David Steele, we were successful in raising the thousands of dollars so that Leon Newkirk Day will indeed represent Maryland and Catonsville Senior High this summer in Washington, D.C. But for some strange reason, WJZ-TV's Sally Thorner and Stan Saunders just weren't allowed to do that Leon Newkirk Day story. What a difference. What a difference WJZ has made, and I'm sorry they couldn't help out this time. Now, academic costs, as you know, are especially high, and many people donated what they could to assure Leon's going to the Young Leaders Conference. But a big thank you goes to Craig Snyder, who did more, much more than his share to assure Leon's successful beginning here. Now, there is one living Negro League, Major League Baseball player alive in the state of Maryland today. Did you know that? And I've known him for nearly 18 years, and he may be listening now. He and his wife, Audrey, Bert Simmons and Audrey Simmons, who are the co-founders of the Negro League Baseball Museum of Maryland, which we're going to touch on tonight. So I think they're listening tonight, and Bert is recovering, and that's the reason why he's not with us right now. Now, you know, Bert is going to be celebrating his 85th birthday. And that's going to be on May the 16th, 2009, at 1 to 5 p.m. at Martin's West. Now, this is a very important event, not only because Bert Simmons has brought so much love in the world, but because that this event is a fundraiser for something near and dear to our hearts, the Negro League's Baseball Museum of Maryland, which was founded by Brother Bert and Audrey, and on which I serve on the advisory board. Now, since Bert can't join us today, or this evening, he's recovering from that operation in Sinai Hospital, and he's doing very well now. In his place tonight, we will hear from two board members of the Negro League Baseball Museum of Maryland. They are the director, Ray Banks, and President Russell Hopewell, who will tell us about the fundraiser gala on May the 16th and the museum project. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Ray and Russ.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
And I think the second person, that was you, Ray, right? I can recognize your voice, right, Ray?
Yes, it is.
And this is Russell Hopewell.
Oh, we got you, too, there. We got a little strange noise there, didn't we? But it's all right. It's all right. You know, before we discuss the 85th birthday party for Bert, let's talk about the Negro League Baseball Museum of Maryland. Russell, when did it come into being?
It started about June 2008 when Bert and Audrey and Ray and a few other people, supporters, got together to talk about this thing.
Why do you think they thought it was so important at that time?
Because there was a lot of history that just hadn't been talked about or displayed or even seen. And they felt that this was a good way to try and present it and get people who were interested in it to show support and try and put something together so that there other people can see about the Negro League baseball players and what they've done.
Well, you know, when you take a look, and Ray, you with us?
I'm with you.
Ray, tell us a little bit about your collection, which is quite extraordinary. When we talk about seeing some of baseball history, you help provide that, especially to the younger people that come in?
Yes, I have. I started off quite a while ago in collecting artifacts, and a lot of stuff was given to me by various friends. And I'm proud to say, and I'm honored to say, that by meeting Mrs. Simmons quite a while ago, we teamed up as a team. And a lot of things that we've done together, going out to various schools and different organizations promoting Negro League baseball. I have a lot of data, a lot of things. For example, Charlie Pride, the country western singer, was a Negro League ball player himself. We have information on him. I have information on J. Jose Herod, the first black Oriole player, also played in the Negro League, and the first black player that played on the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, I still have his baseball card.
Yes, it's a lot of history that we have so much, and it was an honor for me to have the pastor, Mr. Simmons, agree on using his church as an instrument of education for the students and the kids and the adults.
I'll say, but you know, your collection is living history. And that's really quite extraordinary, especially with younger people who are being introduced to this for the first time.
Yes, and that's another honor. For the very first time, we were able to display a lot of the information about the Negro League, when it started, how it ended, what took place, the involvement of it, the timeline. It's a lot of history. A lot of folks don't realize there were three females that played in the Negro League. It's only one that's still living, Mamie Pina Johnson. And we can do so much to educate the kids and the public and to promote and encourage the general public and the interest and knowledge regarding the history of the era of the Negro League baseball.
So, Russell, is it truthful to say that really education is the key to this museum's existence?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at the things that Ray has put together and how it's set up, it's definitely about education. We've already had one of our board members to bring one of their classes from Liberty Heights Elementary to the school, to the museum to see it, and they were enthralled by what we had and what went on. Mr. Day's wife was there, and Al Burrows was there, along with Burke, and ran an exhibit. It was just a fantastic day that they were there from probably about 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock. They got a chance to hear from those three people, see the museum, and also hear a lot about Jackie Robinson. It was just a great day for those who were there.
Well, it seems to be that that's the kind of thing, I think, that can change a person's life, Russell.
Yes, and we're looking to try and do small things until we have the grand opening with a little small, maybe something in summer with some of the schools coming by and seeing the museum. Because it is something to see. It really is a lot of history there that needs to be shared with the young students and also the adults.
Bert. I'm not. Excuse, I'm going Ray Burt. Ray, when did you really begin to just focus on the Negro League players? Because your memorabilia goes before that, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in 1996, when I met Miss Geraldine Day, I was at a function at the Leon Bays Park, and I met her, and I felt her passion for her husband. And right away, being a baseball fanatic, I wanted to do what I could in a small way to keep his legacy alive. And I found out, well, that's in a way, that's a little bit of selfishness of just keeping one man's legacy alive. But I wanted to do everyone from that point on. And I've been gifted enough and lucky enough to be able to display other ball players and try to keep a legacy alive for every and each and every ball player of the Negro League. But Mrs. Day played a great role as far as inspiring me. And also you, Dr. Bob, I've got to give you your credit, too. You inspired me for the things you've done for Mr. Day in the past.
Well, certainly. Obviously, we'll continue doing them in the future. But the most important aspect of in watching children look at these things, you know, the times that we went to the White House, both times, it was that experience that some of these players had when they came home to see their family, that was the most touching thing of all. Can you understand why?
Yes. It was touching. It's coming from the White House and the children, the looks in their eye. We had an experience. We went to the White House at a T-ball game, Mr. Simmons, myself, and some other ball players, and we came back. As a matter of fact, we were sitting on the bleachers, and the president, Miss Bush, and Frank Robinson just happened to be sitting behind us on the bleachers, and that was an honor for me. We've also been to the Capitol. At the Capitol, they honored Miss Rachel Robinson with the Jackie Robinson Gold Medal Award. That was another honor for us, and Mr. Simmons took a picture with the president's wife. And it's just so happened that we've done a lot of things together. And I also want to say it's just more than just the baseball aspect of it in the museum. We've also showing the struggles of segregation that took place back in the day and how the ball players maintained and they strived and they overcame back in the day. So it's about education as well as baseball and today's life as well.
Well, also what I was referring to was that many of the children, grandchildren of these players, since the players didn't have baseball cards in themselves, sometimes had great doubt about what their grandfather was saying to them. And it changed overnight. And that really made a very big difference in the understanding of bringing the family together. From that perspective, you know, before we run out of time, and we haven't even talked about the event coming up, but if the Negro League Baseball Museum of Maryland, Russell, is at right now at 3800 Patterson Avenue.
That's correct. It's in the basement of Lockhearn Presbyterian Church.
The Lockhearn Presbyterian Church. And if people wanted to come and see it, how do they go about that?
They could call Audrey Simmons.
Call
Audrey Simmons. They could give her a call at 410-597-9797.
Mm-hmm.
And she would be able to, along with some help, to set up an appointment for people to visit.
Okay. So call Audrey Simmons at 410-597-9797.
That's correct.
And that way certainly the connection can be made. Now, most important also is this fundraiser. This event, the fundraiser's money basically is going to the Negro League Baseball Museum of Maryland. Isn't that right, Russ?
That's correct. It is.
And
we're asking everyone to come out and support it, as you indicated earlier. It's Saturday, May 16th at Martin's West, Dogwood Road from 1 until 5.
I love that time. That was the best thing about this, as far as I was concerned. Of going at night to things is so much different than being able to be out there in the middle of daylight. Whose idea was that? This was great.
I think it was Audrey's, probably.
Yes.
Well, that figures. Well, she's a very knowledgeable lady. She's really savvy.
No question about that.
You know, just because she's beautiful doesn't mean she's always going to be very knowledgeable, but she is. And that's what's amazing. Bert, you're a lucky man. That's why he's hanging out here, that's for sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about this event. What will it's at Martin's West, 6817 Dogwood Road. That's exit 17, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Exit 17 on the 695. Now, of course, there's going to be.
I think it's 17. You're right. Yeah,
It's 17.
So what kind of things will be going on besides our sitting down and eating all his birthday cake?
I think there's going to be a program. I don't think the details have been worked out yet. I think we're still working on the details.
Is there going to be an auction?
That's a possibility.
Okay. I know that as I was talking to Geraldine Day yesterday, and she wants to go, and so she's going to be coming with me.
Oh, okay.
Yep, we were going to give her a ride over, and she's been recovering herself, but she's in a state of euphoria now with being with her grandson accomplishing so much. I mean, he is really quite an extraordinary soul. He's now on Who's Who in high schools.
Wow.
I mean, it happened so quickly, but if you know, having known him since he was one or two, it's very easy to see how that happened, and it has a lot to do with his mother and his grandmother. Sarah Clark is his mom, and Geraldine, because, they knew exactly what Leon Day wanted.
Yes.
He loved children. Isn't that right, Ray?
That is correct.
I mean, he gave away his baseball glove. He gave away his baseball shirt, he gave a jersey, and baseball hat to children.
Yes.
He didn't sell them. And boy, what a difference that could have made. A baseball glove today from the Negro Leagues, you're talking tens of thousands of dollars. Isn't that right, Ray?
Yes, right. That's correct. He had a tremendous heart for the kids, for the children.
Yeah, so this is a major, most important thing. So now, in getting tickets, how can our listeners acquire tickets?
Well, once again, they can call Audrey, and she will be able to direct them as to how they can get tickets.
Okay, that's 410, Audrey Simmons at 410-597-9797.
Mm-hmm.
And Audrey, well, you know how to spell it, Audrey, friends. Write that down, because this is super important. I am looking forward. Once you come and see the collection that Ray has put together, it's really put together with a great deal of love. I mean, this man, when he works on something, he puts all of his heart into it, and that really makes a difference. Isn't that right, Russell?
Yeah, that's why the museum is so special, because of Ray's exhibit and also Bert's presence.
It
really is outstanding just to see what they both have done with the space that they have, from when they started and now looking at it as you see it today. I mean, it's really awesome.
And I must say this, too, that once you see the interactions of Mr. Simmons with the children, and I've been with him many a time, it's unbelievable. And those kids learn a lot from him, respect him. We received a lot of letters at one time from the McDonough High School students. And it's a lot of thanks and a lot of respect goes for Mr. Simmons from those kids.
Well, Bert Simmons is truly the last remaining Major League, Negro League baseball players alive in Maryland. There are many others that are alive, but they did not play in Negro League Major Leagues. It's not that they're not Negro League players. They were, but there's a difference between that kind of level. and it's mighty tough. You know enough to realize that I would never want to play again. If I ever play in baseball, I would never want to play against the Negro League team. And with the way they play, I don't think you'd be alive. I would be alive afterwards because they play to win, and their rules of the game are different. We're different than white Major League Baseball.
They play for the love of the game.
Yes, and only 15 players on the team. I mean, you figure it. I mean, they play. That's the reason why they played so many good positions. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting both of you.
Same here, Dr. Bob.
On May the 16th, 2009, 1 to 5 p.m. That is just awesome. I mean, really, you can party for a long time in the afternoon instead of having to do it at night. And
right.
Then you come outside and everything's dark.
Well, we'd like to thank you for the opportunity to talk about the Negro League,
yes.
Negro Baseball League, Museum of Maryland.
Well, you're very welcome.
Thank you, too, Dr. Bob.
And I look forward to having a good time with you guys. And friends, also, you know, you want the tickets to this, get them. Get them for your friends as well. And the way to do that is by calling this number, 410-597-9797, 410-597-9797, that is. And say hello to Audrey for me, would you please? She's a very dear friend of ours. And she and her husband, Bert, who's going to be 85 years old, this is his birthday party. And I'm making sure I'm going to get as much of his cake as he can. He owes me some of his cake. And also the co-founders, they are the co-founders of the Negro League Baseball Museum of Maryland. Thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Now, coming up next, where was Jesus from the ages of 12 to 30? The Bible is silent on these formative years, and filmmaker Paul Davids joins us next to review the evidence that Jesus was in India. Don't go away.
This is Hall of Famer Monty Irvin, reminding you to stay tuned to 21st Century Radio's Hieronymus and Company for updates on Negro League baseball stars.
Jackie Robinson hit that ball. It went zooming across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball.
And when he swung his bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile. Yeah, boy.
WCBM.
If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at theSellingWell.com. That's theSellingWell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit theSellingWell.com or call the Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. Well, let's take a look inside the prize library, or library, as we used to say, this hour. It's the book, The Greatest Story Never Told, The Babe and Jackie, by Ray Negron. HarperCollins Publishers, first correct caller, will win win that book, plus a number of other books and periodicals. Here's the question to answer. Who was Zoe's first guest on 21st Century Radio last week? You just tell us who Zoe's first guest was on 21st Century Radio last week, then you're going to be our winner, but you need to qualify. In order to do that, this is what you got to do. Whoops, he fell asleep. Got her on that one. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
Hi, this is Phyllis Galdi, editor-in-chief of Fate Magazine, F-A-T-E Magazine, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio with the wonderful, famous Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
I remember those caravans. Hey, that's Telesma. That's right, more on Telesma. And that song is Egyptian Sun, Another Time. But, you know, about 40 years ago, 40 years ago, I was a member of a number of secret societies that taught that the lost years of Jesus, that is about the time of his 12th or 13th year, to his 30th year, plus 30 maybe, plus, were spent journeying to, living in, and studying in India. Now, they also taught that Jesus didn't die on the cross, but was nursed by his family back to life, whereupon, after he recovered, he returned to India and was buried there. Now, we've touched on this topic several times on 21st Century Radio, but it wasn't until the year 2000 that we interviewed Ed Martin on this important research, and his just published then book called King of Travelers, Jesus' Lost Years in India. Now, here we are 9 years later, and Ed Martin's work has been expanded in two ways. He has an updated book called Jesus in India, King of Wisdom, and a film by Paul David's Jesus in India. And in my opinion, this film and this book are the best research on this topic. And if you have the courage to seek the truth, then it's a necessary read or watch. I wish I would have had these in my hands 40 years ago, because all of the stuff that we learned in these various societies were secret. We weren't allowed to talk about it. And we were always looking for another source, which was a good documented source. Now we got one. We don't have to worry about that. Just forget that secret societies teach that, friends. It doesn't matter anymore. Well, you know, courage is what you need, because the author of this book, Edward T. Martin, needed a great deal of it. Why? Well, because he was a former fundamentalist from Texas who was ousted from his church for asking unwelcome questions. Now, what kind of unwelcome questions were they? Well, listen to this. Well, actually, basically, this was the answer. He said, if God wanted you to know that, it would have been in the Bible, he was told. So stick to worrying about your own salvation. But that wasn't good enough for Edward T. Martin, who undertook a seeker's quest across 4,000 miles of India in search of answers and evidence about where Jesus was during the hidden years from ages 12 to 30. And I think joining us right now is the man who had the courage to do the film. His name is Paul Davis, but he's a courageous soul. He always has been. Just listen to this. Paul Davids was Marvel Productions coordinator for the original The Transformers TV series, and many episodes of which he wrote. And he went on to executive producer of and co-write Showtime's now classic film, Roswell, in 1994, which was nominated for a Golden Globe as Best Motion Picture for Television. He made his directorial debut, or debut, as we used to say in the old days, with the feature documentary Timothy Leary's Dead in 1997, and I've never seen it. Now, the husband and wife team of Paul and Hollis Davids are also noted for authoring six of the million-selling Star Wars sequel books in the early 1990s for Lucasfilm. Paul Davids also wrote and directed Starry Night, The Artist and the Shaman, The Sci-Fi Boys, and the latter of which won the prestigious Saturn Award in Hollywood from the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror as Best DVD of 2006. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, and it's only been, Paul, 14 years.
I think so, Bob, and I think my resume is getting too long. Yeah,
well, that's why we had to edit this down. This was edited.
I'm too old. I've done too much.
Well, maybe you shouldn't do so much. Maybe you should take a vacation.
But it has been Well, 1994 is when Roswell came out on Showtime. And I remember you and I had quite an interview at that time about the Roswell incident.
Well, of course, the Roswell incident was just made up by a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Now, there's nothing that can be concerned about that.
And yeah, it wasn't even a weather balloon, I hear. It was a balsa wood kite.
It was all made up.
Yeah.
It was all made up. And to just take a look.
Somebody threw a hubcap.
Oh, well, look, now we're having an astronaut coming out and actually telling us that UFOs exist. What's going on around here?
Edgar C. Mitchell. And he's not only announced that there has been contact with aliens and there has been a cover-up, but are you surprised that neither the New York Times nor the Wall Street Journal even printed it?
Well, the New York Times...
This man has walked on the moon longer than any other human being alive. There's only a handful of people that ever did walk on the moon. And he's not news, you see.
Well, you know how the nasty negatives always talk about astronauts who see UFOs?
Yeah.
They just said they're space jockeys. Come on. All they are... all they are is they go around and fly jets and stuff. I mean, you know, the way they debunk you is so pathetic. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, I've gotten used to the debunking over the years.
Well, it's about time.
You know, you mentioned I did a film on Timothy Leary. Roswell certainly got its round of debunking. And now Jesus in India. Actually, it's really been nicely embraced by a lot of people who feel that it has expanded their awareness. And I do think this film is a very even-tempered and fair film in that it gives all sides of the argument a chance to air their point of view while pursuing what we think may be the best evidence to fill in the lost years of Jesus. And it took a lot of work and thousands of miles of travel and a lot of serendipity to get into places that Westerners usually are not welcome and are not permitted to film.
I'll say, I was real. That's what's so exciting about this.
I'm glad you love the film. Hey, listen, let me start out with a plug because some people might be, you know, online and they need to know that Jesus in India the movie.com is where it's all happening with this film. And Jesus in India the movie.com. We now have the DVD out after it's been on Sundance Channel now 5 times in the U.S. And Showtime just showed it 4 times in Australia for Easter.
Well, that's what I love about cable television. I mean,
it reaches a lot of people.
Yeah, not just that, but sometimes they may put your film on for an entire day. No, the stuff that we've done for History Channel and National Geographic and Discovery, they've repeated them sometimes half a day.
Uncensored, no advertisements. It was really good having it on TV, but for the DVD, I added an extra 80 minutes, I think, mm-hmm. Yeah, 80 minutes
yeah, 80
of
minutes.
Bonus material, so am I exhausted after being on this for 4 years? You bet.
Well, yeah, 4,000 miles, 4,000 miles and...
In the heat, in the worst time of the year. It just worked out that we had to go in the summer and film in the summer, and the heat is, it's like being in Iraq in the summer, and the humidity, it's oppressive, and then come the monsoons and the washed-out roads and the terrorists, because we had some close brush-ups with terrorism. We went to some dangerous places to film this, too, but, you know, we did it. You know, we just pressed ahead, and doors kept opening for us, and I really hope a lot of people will... We'll take a look at what we offer and what the evidence is.
Well, they gotta because this is, I think, going to be mainstream in a decade or two, if you don't mind my saying.
You think it's going to take that long?
Look, when you have the New York Times, who won't even focus on this kind of stuff, of course it will.
Yeah.
Bob,
14 years ago when you and I were talking about Roswell, did you still think that they'd be, you know, not telling the truth about it even now?
You're right, and I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought they would have been too embarrassed to keep lying like that. I mean, that's the sickness that we're involved in now.
Well, now they're too embarrassed to admit how embarrassed they are.
All right. Now, let's get now into the reasoning as to why this is an extremely important film.
Yeah.
And I know we're coming up on a break now, but first of all, I'm just going to kind of introduce this question, and then you're going to study up on it because you probably... No, we don't have to? We don't have to go to that break? Okay, we've got enough time.
You see what happened, Bob? Your sponsor heard what this is about and just pulled out on you.
I'm always overruled. I'm always overruled. And that's okay with me because lots of times I'm wrong. Now, very much appreciated is the quality of research that you guys demanded to do and that you gathered key authorities on this controversial topic. And parts of, especially, would you briefly summarize Ed Martin's views on Jesus in India? That is, how did he get there? Why did he go? And generally where he went? Because this is we're going to lay the playing field here, because that's the most important topics as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, you stated the basic problem, which is that the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, don't talk about Jesus from the age of 12 to 30. There's only one sentence in Luke that covers 18 years of the life of Jesus Christ. And that one sentence says, and Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. End of story. Now, in film, we call something like that a jump cut. That's a big, you've left a lot of the story on the cutting room floor. Why? Everybody wonders why. It really bothered Ed. And he began to become familiar with some of the esoteric and non-esoteric writings, claiming that Jesus spent at least part of those years in India. Of course, he came across the writings of Edgar Cayce, America's sleeping prophet, who did have readings about Jesus that placed Jesus in India for part of those years. He came across the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ by Civil War soldier Levi Dowling. Now, this, of course, it was a channeled book. And channeling on the long list of credibility for me has always been toward the bottom of the list.
Well,
how is it channeled? Where does it come from?
Right.
But it's interesting material that has a lot of detail to it and specifically mentions Jesus having been at the Jagannath in Puri, India, which is on the East Coast. This becomes an interesting little key in the puzzle. But the most juicy and tantalizing piece of this puzzle comes from a Russian who in 1887 was at a monastery 14,000 feet up in the Himalayas. His name was Nicholas Notovich. He's an explorer. He has an accident there on his horse. He breaks a leg. He spends weeks and weeks there recovering. He gains the confidence and trust and help and care of the Buddhist lamas or monks who are there. They have many ancient documents at the Hemis Monastery, and they present to him ancient scrolls called The Life of Saint Isa, the Best of the Sons of Men. Now, here, this is the core of the mystery right now about those missing 18 years. Who is Saint Isa? That is Jesus. Isa is the name for Jesus among not only the Muslims, not only the Hindus, but also the Buddhists. They call him Saint Isa. And if you listened to Rick Warren's benediction at the inauguration of Barack Obama, he referred to Jesus at one point as Isa.
That's
in that
right.
benediction. The first time many Americans may have even heard the name. Now, why The Life of Saint Isa, the Best of the Sons of Men? It's purportedly hundreds of years old, that manuscript, having been copied and recopied and recopied from manuscripts that go back 2,000 years to just after the crucifixion. We don't have that manuscript to test it, to test its age. But what we do know is that Nicholas Notovich translated it, he published it against the advice of a cardinal that he knew from the Catholic Church who said, bury this, and he was debunked viciously. He was assaulted. His integrity was besmirched. They called him a liar. They accused him of making the whole thing up, but he didn't. And if you go on the Internet today, you'll find all kinds of Internet sites that still, from an Orthodox Christian point of view, still try to debunk Notovich and claim that he made it all up. But it's not true that he did. our journey to India took us, for example, to Calcutta at the Ramakrishna Vedanta Math, which is where a famous, reputable Swami, who's authored many books, Swami Abedananda, lived. And about 20, 25 years after Notovitch was at the Hemis Monastery, he went there too, trying to get the answer on this manuscript. They showed it to him. He translated it again. Guess what? Same translation. Oh, a few words, you know, a little different here and there around the edges. But not only did he see it, but now we track it, and in our film you'll see this, to a Russian painter in 1926. This is a really interesting guy, Nicholas Rorick.
We're going to pause here. We're going to pause here for our first break, our last break of the hour, that is. We'll return with Nicholas Rorick, and this fellow is really key, not just in regards to this particular area, but in the Great Seal of the United States. He was the individual that was inspiring those, Henry Asgard Wallace, FDR, our president, and others, Morgenthau, to put the reverse of the Great Seal, the pyramid in the Iona Triangle, on the back of the $1 bill. We'll be back with our guest, Paul Davids, Jesus in India, a 2008 film based on the book by Edward Martin, King of Travelers, Jesus' Lost Years in India. That's actually Jesus in India, the movie.com. Jesus in India, the movie.com.
In search of a quality, top-of-the-line assisted living community while also trying to sell your home, Harmony Hall is the place for you. We understand the current events as well as your healthcare needs. That is why we are working hard to establish a program where you move in before your home sells. Visit www.myhchp.com for more information.
I always wanted to be a fireman when I grew up.
A pilot.
A teacher.
For me, it was an engineer.
Over the years, my dream didn't change.
But the rising cost of college was a big reality check.
I was determined to make it on my own, to find a way that I could pay for college.
That's why I joined the National Guard.
The Guard gives me money for college.
So I can go to school full-time and fly part-time.
My unit helps out after a natural disaster hits.
Like after a tornado.
Flood.
Blizzard.
So I get to help people, just like I always wanted.
And around here, that's almost every June.
Monday through Friday, my job might be in finance. But when a wildfire breaks out, I get called up to help control it. There's no bigger rush than being a firefighter in the Guard.
Than flying a Black Hawk.
Than leading my squad.
Than rebuilding my hometown.
The National Guard put me in charge of my future.
Thanks to the Guard, I'm becoming who I always wanted to be.
You can reach your education and career goals faster in the National Guard. Visit 1-800-GO-GUARD.com or call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask us how much you'll receive towards your college expenses.
Sponsored by the Maryland National Guard and aired by the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Drew Tignanelli of Money, Riches, and Wealth. Each Wednesday night at 6 p.m., I interview a guest on personal finances to help educate you. Listen Wednesday night at 6 p.m. to Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
The filmmakers are coming to Baltimore. It's the 11th annual Maryland Film Fest, which comes complete with an annual 21st Century Radio preview. Let's go to the movies. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Do you ever wonder how biblical women dealt with stress? They experienced famine, war, lack of water, shortage of shelter, and inequality in their culture overall. But somehow, the seven prophetesses of Israel all rose to great leadership as a warrior, midwife, judge, royal queen, and more. Find out how you can be a queen. Kabbalah gives us all the tools for becoming the most we can be. Learn how to create peace in your life and love of others in your heart. Read my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, the Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel. Visit www.sevenholywomen.com. That's www.sevenholywomen.com or visit amazon.com to get my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets.
Hi, this is Colonel Gordon Cooper. I'm one of the seven Mercury astronauts, and I'm listening this evening to Bob Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio.
Well, brother astronaut Gordon Cooper's left his physical body, but he's still hanging around. He is still hanging around. He was over in the studio just the other day. Okay, our guest, of course, for the remainder of the program is Paul Davids, Jesus in India, a 2008 film based on the book by Edward Martin, but the new book actually is not King of Travelers, but Jesus in India, King of Wisdom, the making of the film and the new findings on Jesus' lost years. JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. Go to JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. And, of course, we had just touched on Nicholas Roerich, who is hated by fundamentalists more than just about anybody on the planet for all kinds of reasons, all kind of stupid reasons, but they don't like this guy. Tell us about Nicholas Roerich's possible influence here in 1926.
Okay, well, first, let me tell you who he was. He was a Russian explorer and remarkable painter. He painted probably more than 2,000 paintings in the Himalayas of the incredible sights at those high altitudes and throughout Tibet and Mongolia and northern India. And he was the third person in this chain of investigation of the mysterious document at Himis Monastery about Jesus' lost years. In 1926, he confirmed, having been to Himis and been shown the document, I believe it was his brother who was fluent in Tibetan, and they translated it again, and they sent reports back to New York, where there is the Nicholas Roerich Museum, open today, and you can see many of these paintings. In any event, these reports confirmed the existence of these ancient documents claiming that Jesus had been to India and studied with the Buddhist Lamas, been with the Hindus during those missing years. And this was published in an important New York newspaper at that time called the New York Sun. So he was number three in the chain of people. Then there were others. There's at least four other witnesses to the fact that this ancient document was at Himis. We know the document exists. We would love for it to see the light of day. And in the course of our travels to make the movie Jesus in India, this involved not only getting the film crew to Himis Monastery and talking to the top monks there, but also going to, I don't know whether to call him the Pope of Hinduism or the ultimate Archbishop of Hinduism, but his title is Shankaracharya, and he is a Jagannath, where this manuscript and where Levi Dowling's Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ both said that Jesus spent some of these lost years. We wanted an interview with the Shankaracharya, supreme authority in Hinduism, and we got it. It was extraordinary. It was impossible. We were told, he'll never see you. You'll never get your picture taken with him. You won't even get in the door. But he heard what we were making the film about, that we wanted to have an interview about. He granted the interview, and it was a fountain of information and absolutely spellbinding in his going out on a limb, if you will, to confirm all of these things that were said in these missing documents. Confirming that Jesus was in India, it's part of the knowledge and tradition of the Shankaracharyas, that his office goes back to before the time of Christ, he claims, that there were ancient temples there at Jagannath. At that time, it was an ancient Hindu learning center, and that Jesus not only traveled there, but also in Banaras, which we now call Varanasi on the Ganges River, and went throughout Kashmir. There are many reports that have placed Jesus in Kashmir. He says it's true that there are ancient documents that confirm it. Paramahansa Yogananda's successor at the Self-Realization Fellowship, her name is Sri Dayamata, she had heard this from the previous Shankaracharya on a trip to the United States, that there are ancient documents at Jagannath that confirm Jesus in India. That Shankaracharya passed away before he could write the book about it. The current Shankaracharya confirms it all, but does not readily produce the documents. So we hear him say that there is a sort of cover-up in the Christian world on this information. Now, is it true? I have to say, and as a filmmaker, I wanted balance. I went to the Vatican. I spoke to Monsignor Corrado Balducci, an apostolic nuncio of John Paul II. I went to Georgetown University and spoke to two prominent Catholic professors. I spoke to a Catholic Vatican-accredited journalist, and even the Bishop of Bareilly in India. Now, from the Vatican, we hear the claim that we can only rely on Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John for reliable information about the life of Jesus, and the suspicion that any documents that exist in India would have been created later. Monsignor Corrado Balducci says, falsa, falsa, in Italian, when confronted with all of this.
Yeah, let me also mention that he also says, they are all inventions passed down through generations by the locals in India. And when he was asked if there was a motive why the holy books don't tell about Jesus' life, he says, there is no certainty about this, is there? It's all hypothesis. And that's where, I mean, and also,
well, actually, it's a translator that says that to him, that there's no, you're saying there's no certainty, that it's all hypothesis. And he didn't appreciate being pinned down, but he, you know, you really hit a brick wall with that. I mean, the point is, Catholicism doesn't accept it. But when you examine his claim that this would have been made up by Hindus, let's say, in later years, let's examine it for a moment. It's
well, you have less than 30 seconds to examine. Nope, my boss is telling me nope. We'll have to begin that examination.
We'll save them in suspense. We'll get the answer after your break.
Okay. With our guest, Paul Davids, Jesus in India, a 2008 film based on Edward T. Martin's book, his new book, Jesus in India, King of Wisdom, the making of the film and new findings of Jesus' lost years, because you'll get to know Edward pretty well if you watch this DVD. And you can get a copy by going to go to Jesus in India, themovie.com. Jesus in India, themovie.com. Yes, indeed, we have not touched on many of the scholars, but I think that the way we're going about this right now will get us to just exactly where I wanted to anyway later on, because this was well researched. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Names in talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheelis. There is hope for Chrysler today.